Relationship Steps. Watchman Nee, 20th century Chinese exclusive Plymouth Brethren evangelist and martyr, was an entirely different man from Donald Miller. Nee had been part of what would eventually be known as the Taylor Hales Exclusives, but when visiting England from China, he broke bread with a doctor and his wife who were associating themselves with Open Brethren, so James Taylor Sr. and others excommunicated Nee for the rest of his life to keep him from getting Open Brethren cooties on the Exclusive Brethren worldwide. Nee spent the last 20 years of his life in prison in China and died there, still out of fellowship. His book, Normal Christianity, describes not a method or steps for approaching God, but rather sees in Romans chapters 6 through 8 a description of the stages one can expect in the process of drawing close to God relationally. Unsurprisingly, these stages seem to be replicated in the romantic relationships that mirrors that approach. Nee identifies the stages as A. Knowing, B. Reckoning, C. Presenting oneself, and D. Walking in the Spirit. So, with approaching God, Nee feels that A. First we come to know what's been done for us and what that gives us. We experience it as something only made possible because of what Christ did. Then this awareness just naturally changes our thinking to reflect this new reality. Things are different because of what Jesus did, and we know this. Note that Nee does not start with behavior. That comes later. We read James and want to start with works. Works come later, and only as an outflowing of what has changed within. Otherwise, there's outward stuff, all right, but nothing within besides a desire to pretend there is some Christ in there, to fake some faith. Nee goes on to say that B, then we don't simply know it as a fact, but as we live, reckoning it to be so, our life choices start to reflect it, and the avenues and possibilities it opens up. We don't just know it, we assume it, and start to almost unthinkingly act according to it, as a real thing. C. Then, and we'd expect this to need to happen first, wouldn't we? We respond to this and present ourselves to Christ just as he presented himself to us. Presenting in the relationship sense of, I'm not living just for me anymore. I choose to, from now on, be with you and help you get what you want and need. You're part of my priorities now. Jesus presented himself, submitting to torture, humiliation, and the end of his days on earth, hoping in part to get our attention, to catch our eye, by giving us exactly the thing that we needed and which we could only hope to get from him. He was planning to have a continuing relationship with us as a result of what this work started between us. D. Then, having made this commitment, to walk together. It is only natural to live out the rest of our lives in this way, together, and in consideration of the concerns and desires of the other. Note that this comes last, and it's not an overly self-conscious thing that keeps us focused on our behavior either, agonizing over what others might think of it. Our thoughts and our hearts are on the together instead. Copying rather than reckoning. I think most Christians that I meet are trying to skip the B, reckoning, stage. The part where they genuinely accept what Christ has accomplished as something that has indeed been done and which matters and works. Instead, they say should a lot. They're missing the part where what they know has some effect on how they think and decide things and live. In brethren speak, they believe, but can't rest in the knowledge. And so they do not rest. They fidget. They'll say what happened, but they can't reckon it or consider it a done deal. So they try to mimic the outer forms of, and give a trained outer imitation of A, knowing, instead of B, reckoning. Because they can't do it. The fact that Christ's work was sufficient and successful in completely getting us off the hook with God as judge and into his good graces, not just for eternity, but for time as well, is just a lofty theoretical doctrinal fact to many of us. We're not quite grasping how much our fates, reputations, and worth really are tied up in Christ now, as far as God is concerned. So we claim to agree with it intellectually, but feel deep down like it misrepresents or oversimplifies our situation and obligations. We can't simply accept that it is so and think and live that way. We always add a but, a should, or something. We always leap to talk about responsibility. Because liberty and Christ having achieved a finished work scares us, and we want to help save ourselves each day. Is it important that many of us simply can't do B, can't reckon ourselves God's children? That we can't live today as if we are actually okay as far as God is concerned? We haven't given up trying to tow our car out of the river using only our own car, because we've got to dive down there in our scuba gear and keep vainly turning that ignition key waiting for it to roll over, right? It's only sensible. And so we continue to live in fear of letting him down, of angering him, of disappointing him. This is how we insist upon living. We see nobility in it. We are trying to better our position by making sure we believe the right doctrine, agree with the right position and people, abstain from the appropriate things, and engage in all the appropriate behaviors, all so that one day, after death no doubt, perhaps then we can see, present ourselves to God without him being too disappointed or mad. All without having ever, D, walked with Christ in the reality of what changed when Christ came here, having skated right past B, reckoning it to be so. Nothing changed in our view of things, apart from having added more guilt in hopes of it making us live more Christian, all without dealing with the reality of God the Holy Spirit, sent to us as comforter and strengthener, now that Christ isn't here in the same way he was before. We think we have to do most of it ourselves, alone. A new nature or a new creature? Here's what makes this problem obvious. The Bible talks about the old man, the person that we used to be, before we had anything to do with Christ and his efforts. Or to put it in terms a Christian can relate to, the same old person we end up being when we try to be a new person, without Christ being the inspiration and source of all that. The old man, that guy. The one we seem to keep being, no matter what we vow. The guy who always vows stuff, but then can't do it. That guy with that unworkable self-help method that we keep finding ourselves following, living a solitary life completely untouched by Christ deep down, with bad blood between us and God, and no way for either of us to fix that without Christ's intervention. Or, in Christian terms, trying to pretend Christ isn't a real person who's really helping us, and instead, trying to earn grace and fix things ourselves, often through religious acts, like vows, with human willpower, generally from the outside in, fake it until you can make it, trusting in our own capacity for self-control, trusting human systems like church groups to catch us when we fail in that area. And Jesus would never have had to come here and die if all that stuff actually worked. This old approach and attitude is so different from what is presented in the Gospels that Paul the Apostle sees it not only as an old life, but the life of people we no longer are. The old man we once were. The vowing guy who couldn't keep those vows. When I was being kicked out of my church, concern was expressed at my apparently heretical doctrine that Paul says to reckon the old man dead and his works. Concern was expressed that I clearly felt that Paul was saying to reckon or think of myself as a new person living a new life, as anyone does when a life-changing epiphany of any kind takes hold. I thought I should get on with my life, free of the shame, fear, and dread, trust Jesus, be at peace about sin and self and God. To me, it was as simple as that. They warned me, with very serious faces and voices, that I must reckon the old nature to be dead, of course, but never, ever forget how very active the old nature is in our lives, and how we must never cease to fight it and keep it in the place of death. I was tempted to laugh at that point. Felt like handing them a dictionary, open to the letter R, for reckon. Because my focus was on thanks be to Jesus, I get to live a new way, making me a new person, and it's about friggin' time. I'm tired of that old battle, that old mindset, that old guy, and his continual broken good intentions. But they insisted that my focus needed to perpetually be on my past situation and self, as some kind of pursuing zombie who would haunt my every step and rear up continually, making my life nothing more than a bad horror movie. I could never relax or be at peace or just live my life. I needed to vow to show up at their meetings and do it, or man, would I sin. That's how they claimed to live. That's how they wanted me to live. And they were concerned that my troubling attitude might rub off on younger, more impressionable people. The work of Christ didn't work, they seemed absolutely certain, until after we'd died. We had to wait. The kingdom of heaven was absolutely not here yet. The great tribulation, after all, had not yet happened. Well, what good is the work of Christ if it doesn't help me or change anything now? And what does the Bible actually promise about it and about the kingdom? To their mind, the work of Christ moved us from the natural, unedified state of the average person into a hellish, divisive wrestling with self for the rest of my days on earth, daily vowing to keep him contained, waiting for death or the rapture so the work of Christ could kick in. In the meantime, religion, saved by grace, kept from sin by church. They even invented a special term so they could sub it in for the scriptural language. The term they invented was the old nature. They wanted to insist that rather than the work of Christ changing us right down to our very nature, our very motivations and approaches and responses to everything, that we merely had a second nature added on. They taught us that we now had a new nature and that the two natures coexisted like an angel and a devil on each shoulder. How's that for theology, the Warner Brothers cartoon way? So, not a new man, not a new creature, not a new person with an irrevocable change. Same people, with a second nature added, like a second, tiny head sewed onto his neck. Vows to vow about controlling that old nature for sure. And they pretended this was how the Bible spoke about the thing. Two core natures? No man can have two essential natures. Your life changes and moves on, or it remains bemired in the same old crap. There is really no middle ground on stuff like that. I've either moved to Germany, or I'm still here. With this handy term, the old nature, they could say, never forget that the old nature is very much alive and very active in us. Handy. If they said things like, never reckon the old man to be dead, they knew there was a Bible verse that said the very opposite.